This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
Good evening and welcome to Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and we are out of the studio and spread out by a lot more than 1.5 metres, let me tell you. Welcome to the Worldwide Wave panel tonight, Paul.
Good evening.
And Stefan.
Hello.
Since 2016, ILGA, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, has published the Trans Legal Mapping Report. The report gives a very detailed account of the impact of laws and policies on trans persons in 143 UN member states. The third edition of the report has been recently released.
Zan Xiam is one of the co-authors of ILGA's World's Trans Legal Mapping Report. Zan was the coordinator of ILGA's World Gender Identity and Expression Program, supporting and strengthening trans movements through ILGA's membership base. Zan is also on advisory committees for the Asia Pacific Transgender Network and Trans Europe's TVT project.
Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
But then if you look at the criminalization section for these countries, you see also that there are numerous reported cases of quite severe violence and discrimination that people face, and very often at the hands of police and other authority figures, using a whole bunch of laws, laws relating to sex work, laws relating to drugs, vagrancy, loitering, beggary, and in detention settings.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
The latest edition of ILGA's Trans Legal Mapping Report has just been released. And in the third edition, the report is the most comprehensive global summary of the laws and policies impacting trans people across the world. Covering 143 countries, the report highlights provisions which set out how trans and gender diverse people can change their sex gender marker and names on official identity documents, that is, legal gender recognition. But it also collects information on laws criminalizing trans identities. Zan Xiam is one of the co-authors of the report, and Zan was the coordinator of ILGA World Gender Identity and Expression Program, designed to support and strengthen trans movements, utilizing United Nations mechanism and strategic research. We asked Zan why ILGA publishes such report and how it is compiled.
Yeah, it's a good question. ILGA is an organization that's a global membership organization. So it's the only global federation of LGBTI organizations worldwide. And so it always has had an interest in publishing global reports. It's published the state-sponsored homophobia report for the last 13 years, I believe. And that's an overview of laws as they relate to same-sex behavior, including criminalization around the world. So when I started the Gender Identity Expression Program in 2014 at ILGA, there was already an interest from the membership, the trans membership, for there to be a similar report coming out of ILGA on issues that related to trans people. At the time, TGEU, Transgender Europe, was putting out a global mapping of an overview of lived experiences of trans people around the world, but it wasn't from a legal point of view. So it was very much from the social perspective. And of course that touches upon legal issues, but it didn't take that exact approach. So so in 2016, we decided to compile the first edition, and it turned out to be useful. So the feedback we got was that it was useful. We also worked together with Transgender Europe to make sure that, you know, information was complementary. And so we continue with it.
And Zahn, you've now put out the third edition of the Transgender Legal Mapping Report. Tell us, is life getting better for trans communities?
You know, I wish that after three editions, I wish I had asked myself that question first, because everyone seems to ask that question. And I think we get a bit lost in the data, and then we forget that maybe that's what people want to know. I have to say that the angle through which we do the research makes it quite difficult to answer the question. So we look at it from the point of view of what do the laws say, and how, you know, the nuance of legal gender recognition. So in all three editions, the one constant has been legal gender recognition, which is the ability of people to change their name or gender markers in a certain jurisdiction. So whether that's by policy or administrative process or by law. And that is one window through which you look at the life, how the life of a person is affected, right? And it's quite hard to tell, just looking at that, necessarily what the situation is. So for example, if you have a country that has a really fantastic legal gender recognition process, like say Argentina or Malta, or a lot more of the European countries that have followed, then you could probably say that life is easier and better on the face of it for most trans people in that country. But it doesn't mean that criminalization of them doesn't exist, or it doesn't mean that, you know, trans people, because of a legal gender recognition process, are more likely to have gainful employment or anything like that. It's a good indicator, but it doesn't tell you the whole picture. But if you flip it on the other side, if you have a country where there is no legal gender recognition process, then it doesn't necessarily mean that that process isn't available in some way, and it doesn't mean that people can't access identity documents if they tried in a way that isn't official. It just means that it's under the table in that sense. So it's really hard to tell. In this edition, we decided to cover criminalization examples, and criminalization we've called indirect or direct, so either de facto or de jure criminalization. And for that, you get a bit more of a picture of how authorities act with impunity against trans people. So that gives you another side of the equation. But if you think of it holistically, it is really hard to then say, you know, this country is really great and trans people should try and live there, and this country isn't.
Have you found some countries that are exemplary? And if you have, to know why?
Again, if you just look at legal gender recognition, which is what the report is largely about. So Argentina has a really great model. So it was the first in the world in 2012. That allowed legal gender recognition through a self-identification model or self-determination model, which means that a person can self-declare that their gender is what they say it is, and then have their identity documents changed in the process. Their legal gender recognition law also allows for access to healthcare for trans people, which you know, is at the time was also very forward-thinking. Malta followed suit, and the Maltese government has followed up with a series of initiatives to kind of roll out and to look at what, you know, legal gender recognition was like for people in schools and in public services. So that's also exemplary in that sense. Then you have a lot of Latin American countries which have really great laws, or have developed and passed really great laws for trans people. And this includes trans children. It includes the ability to, in the case of, for example, Costa Rica, they now have a model where you don't even have to have a person's gender on any state issued document. so you can have your gender removed from your birth certificate. Chile just went through a lengthy process and was able to have a legal gender recognition process. So on the face of it, you know, Latin America as a block has very good laws in place. But then if you look at the criminalization section for these countries, you see also that there are numerous reported cases of quite severe violence and discrimination that people face, and very often at the hands of police and other authority figures, using a whole bunch of laws, laws relating to sex work, laws relating to drugs, vagrancy, loitering, beggary, and in detention settings. So those two things exist, you know, in the same countries.
Zan Chiam, co-author of ILGA World's Trans Legal Mapping Report, with us on Joy 94.9. It's a really comprehensive report. I love that they do this. It gives some factual basis to put into arguments where, you know, people quite often assert their own views, their own stereotypes. But it is quite a narrow focus. You don't necessarily get into the impacts on daily lives of trans people.
Well, I suppose when you're covering 140 plus countries, you need to stick to the facts, and that's what the report's doing. It's looking at the actual laws that and policies that do impact trans people across the globe.
In this report, it's the first time they are actually collected the law criminalizing trans identities. So they're trying to go further than just the legal gender recognition and mechanism around gender recognition to look at in parallel of discrimination and criminalization. So I think it's a different view from previous reports, from what I understand, and it's hopefully giving us avenues to see what can be done.
But I think it's a good place to start. You know, you got to have your facts in front of you before you can. It's a good place to start with having all the facts in front of you.
Interesting, perhaps unsurprising, that countries where there's where they do have legal gender recognition, they have the laws in place for you to change your identity on official documents. You can still have those types of discrimination, employment issues, but in countries where there's criminalization, you rarely have anything. There's really not much of an upside.
Yeah, so you've got the legal framework to avoid some of the attack by the police and by this kind of thing, by these channels. But you know, sometimes, as Zan was saying, they don't use these laws. They use other laws like vagrancy, I think, and it was sex work was the big one to target. So although you've got the gender recognition, but it doesn't stop some of the legal power to actually discriminate against people.
Yeah, I think doesn't Zan use the example of a trans person of colour that could just get picked up because they're just walking down a street, because it's assumed that because they're a trans person of colour, they must be looking for sex work or doing sex work. Mm. This person just walking down the street, how is that soliciting for sex work?
They are very well ingrained stereotypes. Good to hear that there are countries where life is better for trans people. Argentina, didn't realise that they were the first in the world, but only in 2012. So it's only actually been a very short period of time since these changes started coming in on the international level.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that Malta's there, because Malta seems to be the standout in Europe for...
The pin-up country.
Yes, for LGBTI rights, full stop, basically, for Malta. But I was sort of surprised how, not backwards, but probably not as forward as I thought Australia and New Zealand would be. There's still some obstacles to changing documentation.
Coming up, we find out why some countries that are progressive with their legislation still have discrimination against trans people. You're listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Hey there, beautiful people. My name is Ian Field Stewart. I use they, them, she, her pronouns. I'm the founder of the Ochre Project, and I'm speaking to you on the World Wide Wave Australia, Joy 949.
Even though we're currently broadcasting outside of the studios, you can still message us via Facebook, World Wide Wave, or W3 Joy.
In fact, we had a message during the week from Hofler straight after our show on Serbia, where we spoke about their openly lesbian prime minister and the perhaps not as much progress as hoped in Serbia. Hofler says, will we ever see an openly gay president in America with Pete Buttigieg, who has been making a name for himself both on the campaign trail trying to become president, but also in taking it up to Fox News. Can you see it happening?
Not yet. No, the same. I can't see that happening with the way it is.
We will have to watch and cheer from the sidelines. W3 Joy or World Wide Wave is where you'll find us on Facebook to send us your comments.
In September, ILGA released the third Trans Legal Mapping Report. In this report, covering up the 143 UN member states, ILGA highlights the provisions that set out legal gender recognition and identify the laws that criminalise trans identities. Zane Cheam is one of the co-authors of the report and has been explaining the differences between countries with progressive laws and those with criminalisation. We asked Zane why there are often some tensions between legal recognition and societal attitudes.
So the right to an identity document as a person of a certain gender or no gender doesn't necessarily mean that the police are going to not see you as a lesser human being, because there's a perception by the police that if they see, for example, you know, a trans woman of color, that they're not going to assume that trans woman of color is soliciting for sex work, even if she's just walking down the street, right? I mean, if you look at, you know, the indigenous population in Australia, they have identity documents and the right to exist. But yeah, the situation is in many cases, you know, really dire and fourth world conditions. So those things exist in all populations. And just because a trans person can get a identity document doesn't necessarily mean that changes everything about their lives. You know?
For those countries that do put these legal hurdles, including criminalisation, in place for trans people, is there a commonality across those countries? Is there something that they're all doing?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So when we classified the, let's call it the direct criminalisation and the indirect criminalisation examples, for the direct criminalization, which means on the books, there is something in the law of that country that says that, you know, a person can't express their gender in a certain way, or a person can't identify in a certain gender. There's only been 13 countries in the world that we found that do that explicitly. Half of them are religious laws, and about half of them are not. And by religious laws, I mean Islamic laws in countries that may be Islamic countries and may not be Islamic countries. And some of them have the explicit force of the law in that country, and some of them don't. But because of the influence of that religion in that country, basically take on the force of law in that country. In those countries, I mean, we have also collected examples where trans people, you know, are also arrested and detained. We haven't necessarily done in-depth research to see whether, for example, in those countries, the arrest and detention of trans people is easier, whether there are greater numbers and so on, than in countries where there's de facto criminalization, which means that where people get picked up for laws that aren't explicitly about gender, but because of a person's gender expression or identity, the person is picked up under those laws. So on the face of it, not much difference. But it has been very interesting and I suppose quite shocking to record that there still are countries, I mean, not still, that there are countries that explicitly say you cannot express your gender in a certain way.
And what about our little corner of the world, the Asia-Pacific region? How do we fare in terms of transgender rights?
So Asia-Pacific, in the ILGA worldview, Asia and Pacific form two regions. So you've got Oceania and you've got Asia. I mean, Asia is the biggest, most populated region in the world. So it's massive. And for Asia, we more or less include Central and Eastern Europe, Central Asia. We go all the way out to West Asia, and we finish at East Asia. And we come all the way down to Southeast Asia. And Oceania, we've got Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific. So trans rights, if you look at legal gender recognition in Asia, is not great. You only have one country in the world which has a self-determination model. I'm sorry, one country in the region, which is Pakistan. So Pakistan has a transgender act, which was passed in 2018, I think. Sorry. And that, on the face of it, allows people in Pakistan to change their gender markers using a self-determination model. In reality, people have reported really different experiences. And sometimes there's a complete misunderstanding of the courts or of the bureaucracy about what that actually means when they're faced with a case before them. So that's a problem. Vietnam has been going through a process of enacting a law in their civil code which should allow people to change their gender marker. But Vietnam has a really, really lengthy legal process. So it's like it's a six-step process to actually have a law actually become a law. And they are stuck in the middle of that process right now and have been for a couple of years, unfortunately. That's not a self-determination model. So that's a model that still has pathologization, which means that a person still has to go through the medical profession in order to change their gender marker. But the fact that it's coming up is a good thing. Kazakhstan, Mongolia, and Singapore have regressed. So in these countries, there used to be a system in place where people could change their gender markers, but it wasn't a self-determination model, but there have been additional hurdles that have come into place since the 2017 report. So that's unfortunate. So in the case of Mongolia, a person has to show more doctor certificates. In the case of, no, sorry, I think there's an age change. I can't remember. Between Kazakhstan and Mongolia, one of them has an age change. So it used to be 18, now it's 21. Singapore used to be quite a under-the-table relaxed model, but now has a very detailed scrutinizing process where a person basically has to be strip searched in front of a medical board. And then you come to the Pacific. So Australia has slowly been getting better.
Do countries in the Pacific where the country is familiar with the third gender, I'm thinking Fafafine and the likes of that, does that make it easier? Are there better laws in those countries where there's a history of a third gender culture?
No. So wow. In a lot of the Pacific countries, the laws don't really reflect the lived reality. So you have cultural genders in a lot of the Polynesian countries, but the laws don't necessarily reflect that reality. And people whose gender markers might fall under a male or female category might still get caught up in a sodomy law, for example, right? Or a same-sex activity law. The reports coming out of Fiji have been really interesting, because what people have said there is that because names have a strong cultural significance and names are, for example, given by a person's grandparents, that in terms of legal gender recognition, at least in Fiji, they're less inclined to want to change their names, but more interested in the gender marker change process. So that's really interesting. And that's in a way, a flip on a lot of gender marker change processes, where name tends to be the easier one and people tend to do that if they can't access the legal marker change. New Zealand has stalemated, let's say. So they have a two-tier policy, and it's across the country, unlike Australia, where it's state by state. New Zealand had a more progressive passport policy, where you could change your gender marker on your passport quite easily, and a less progressive birth certificate process. And they were trying to reform that, but that's been stalled because of a lot of opposition. And so the birth certificate process remains more onerous, and you have to go through a court system to do that.
Some insight into the state of the legal issues for trans people worldwide contained in ILGA's third trans legal mapping report with co-author Zan Sham with us on Joy 94.9.
We touched on police discrimination earlier, and you know, even if a trans person has correct documentation, they can still be treated very poorly. This embedded transphobia. How do you go about making change in a highly structured service like a police service?
It's echoed the issues that were around the police and all the Black Lives Matter movement, and how this is so embedded that can you actually do anything, or do you have to restart from scratch?
I think you can. I'm thinking about, so we've had some stories on here, and some of our guests have talked about it, where they have actually gone to different police forces and opened up about what happens to them. So they've given the personal side, the personal story to what happens, and they've seen an improvement in the policing. Now, I'm not going to say that's going to happen everywhere, but there are ways to actually improve societal's attitudes, and it tends to be about talking about the personal stories.
So do you start with LGBTIQ liaison officers that are openly from the community, and do you think that could help?
Well, here in Victoria, I know LGBT people actually go out to the training academy and speak to new recruits as a part of their training, and not just LGBT, different groups like different minority groups, Indigenous representatives go as well. So that's just a part of that training process, I guess.
What Matt has just explained there, I think, is probably the first step, which would then probably lead on to having liaison officers.
Coming up on Joy 94.9, we hear about what is behind the clash between feminists and trans activists. This is Worldwide Wave.
This is Georgi Tabagari from Tbilisi Pride on Worldwide Wave, Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one queer story at a time, Worldwide Wave. And tonight we're looking into legal rights of trans people on a global scale. A special hello to everybody listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcast automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Now, don't forget to, I mean, podcasts are all the rage, and you can have your own podcast, perhaps for your own interests group or your own business, because Joy has a brand new podcasting and radio content course. It provides you with everything you need to create and pre-record your own podcast. We have an expert team of trainers that will go through all the basics from writing to the law, interview techniques, presenting, recording and editing. And best of all, you can use the equipment from your own home so you can do it remotely. Find out all about it at joy.org.au.
On Worldwide Wave tonight, we're looking at the legal rights of trans people in the UN member states through the third edition of the Trans Legal Mapping Report released by ILGA. Zane Cheam is one of the co-authors of the report, and we asked what is driving the clash between feminists and trans activists.
There's feminists and there's feminists, right? I mean, I'm a feminist. You know, I know lots of feminists. So there are some people who say they're feminists, and I believe that probably are feminists, who seem to have taken the approach that the gain in trans rights means a loss in women's rights. And I would say that that's a really restrictive view of what rights are. My view is that we should aim for all rights to progress together. And if somebody next to me is able to live their life in a better way, it doesn't mean that my life is, the quality of my life has deteriorated because of that. So I think it's a really curious and complicated issue. I on a personal level, don't really understand it, but I can see how if you have a certain worldview that views gender as fixed, and I think that this is the interesting part, that I think that the people who hold these views hold the view that gender is fixed at birth and you can't change it. And because you can't change it, there are certain people in the world who cisgendered women are women and are real women and will always be women. And transgender women are just pretending to be women and they never will be women. And I think that's where it comes from. And then from that flows a lot of the reactions against safe spaces for women, right? Which is, I think, where they've gained a lot of traction, where they've said, well, in prisons or in halfway houses or whatever it might be, that somebody who isn't really a woman, according to the way that they've identified it, has entered those spaces and then assaulted somebody or made somebody feel unsafe. So it's, I think it stems from that notion that gender is, or sex or gender is fixed at birth. And then from that, you know, the fractures have been created. But then, I mean, trans people have kind of responded to that in different ways. And it doesn't feel like a dialogue has actually been able to happen, which I think is quite sad.
Politicians use trans people as a political wedge in many countries. How can we take away that that tactic? How can we take away the fear that they drive?
I think the reasoning behind that is different country from country. So in some countries, it's driven by either the politician's belief in a certain religious ideology or wanting to appease a religious portion of their electorate. So I think some of it comes from that. And then it's about, addressing it or advocating through that religious angle. And there are LGBTI groups or LGBT groups who are also interfaith, and they are able to have dialogue based on how do you say it? From that faith platform, which I think is really good, because I've seen it happen, and it's been actually really effective, where you have, for example, a lesbian pastor who's actually face-to-face talking to 20-year-old Catholic university students who believe that trans people are there to steal their children or their future children, right? And coming from that commonality perspective has been really good, because it's not someone who isn't speaking the language of faith, you know? From the religious perspective, I've seen that be effective. Then you have other governments other politicians who are using this kind of anti-LGBT agenda to enhance an argument about their national identity in the way that they've interpreted it, and saying that LGBT people, so not just trans people, but LGBT people, are eroding our sense of ourselves as a culture and a country. And I think that one is much more dangerous in a way, because it feels like that's resulted in more immediate traction with the electorate and more violence against people immediately. That is more about, I think, trans or LGBT people working together with other progressive groups in that country and trying to get support out of that country to combat that sort of right-wing nationalism, which is, another advocacy strategy. So it really depends.
You've identified that the situation, legal situation, is very diverse across all these countries. Is there a way that we can foster changes for trans people, worldwide? Can we bring all this to make it better?
Yeah, so, again, the report is like the tip of the iceberg, right? But really what needs to happen is that if you have a government that's open-minded to improving people's lives, let's put it that way, open-minded to improving people's lives, and advocacy groups in that country who are able to work together with the government, I think that a lot can happen, because you can then start looking at how to actually do things that affect people, which means healthcare, right? Education, employment, like those are, those are the real things that are actually about what makes things better for people. Legal gender recognition is just one, let's call it a convenient lens to look through, what could be the situation in a country. But then you really want to see, like, if a government is open to, first changing gender markers for people based on a self-identification model, then what are they interested in terms of working together with the community to actually have a holistic healthcare model that's actually accessible for people, to actually educating their medical practitioners to be respectful of all people, of all identities when they come into a clinic, right? To not discriminate between one kind of medical care and another kind of medical care, but saying that for certain people of the population, this is considered essential care, even if it may not be for everybody else. And that as a society, so a government that's actually progressive enough to say that as a society, we recognize that some people have needs that we should support, and it doesn't have to be the same as what everyone else needs. It's just the fact that our population is different and we respect that diversity. So I think that when you actually are able to start working at that level with a government, then you actually start to see change. Unfortunately, we don't record stuff like that because it's massive, right? But there are studies and reports done within countries about things that are happening in their country in relation to all of these indicators. So
let's hope things keep changing for the better. Zahn Chiam, co-author of ILGA World's latest trans legal mapping report, thank you very much for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Stefan.
It's always been one of those things that has puzzled me why some feminists are so aggressive, so quite angry about trans people getting rights. It just baffles me.
It's not all feminists, obviously.
It's not,
And obviously, you know, if you have the view that the gender is fixed at birth and that is interfering with your views, and therefore then all the safe, what's deemed safe for you, then become at risk. But whether it's, we've had discussion on this program before on very notorious feminists.
But surely, even for feminists would surely support safe spaces for people, for women, and why not for trans people?
But they're not seeing this, you know, trans people are women or men. They're seeing them still as the sex assigned during birth. That's not something that they can conceive, I think. I mean, it'd be interesting to interview some feminists that have got these views and try to unpack that.
Give them a grilling. The religion, we also touched briefly on religion and how it's not, in some countries there is actual religious laws that impact on trans people. In a lot of countries it's just that influence of religion and, you know, the need for politicians to appease the electorate.
I don't know that there's any more to say to that. I mean, again, this is just, it's such a widespread issue. You know, it is used in a lot of countries. We've covered a lot of countries in Europe where this is happening.
It's yet again one of the soft targets, together with refugees and migrants and the rest of the LGBTI community.
It's an easy target and a long-lasting target. You know, you can always blame this section of the population for anything that happens. And it works because there are still some people that are not very accepting.
Hopefully legal gender recognition, as highlighted in this report, is just a first step for change for transgender people.
This is Dede Utomo from Kaya Nusantara in Surabaya, Indonesia, speaking on Worldwide Way.
This Joy program has a podcast, and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
A huge thank you tonight to Zan Chiam, co-author of ILGA World's Translegal Mapping Report. And you can find the report at ilga.org, that's ILGA.org.
We'd also like to thank everyone that interacted with us through Facebook. Mamo, Kathy, Mark, Hoffler, Trent, and a heap more that have interacted with us this week. Now, you can find us on Facebook. It's W3Joy. It's really easy, and we'd love to see you there.
And to our fabulous behind-the-scene team, our podcaster Peter and our social media master Dean, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/World Wide Wave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.